Srimad-Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 8, entitled The Story of Pingala, text number 4. Ajosa bala yuktam vibratiham akarmakam shayana vita nidrascha nitendriya vannapi Uja, essential strength. Sa, mental strength. Bala, physical strength. Yutam, endowed with. Vibrat, maintaining. Dehang, the body. Akarmakam, without endeavor. Shayana, remaining peacefully. Vita, freight. Nidra, from nations. Cha, and. Na, not. Ihita, should endeavor. Indriyavan, possessing full bodily, mental, and sensual strength. Api, even though. Translation and purport by the followers of Sri Prabhupada. The word Vita Nidra is in this verse is very significant. Nidra means sleep. Oh, sorry. Sorry. Translation. A saintly person should remain peaceful and materially inactive, maintaining his body without much endeavor. Even though possessed of full sensual, mental, and physical strength, a saintly person should not become active for material gain, but rather should always remain alert to his actual self-interest. Purport. The word Vita Nidra in this verse is very significant. Nidra means sleep or ignorance, and Vita means freed from. In other words, a transcendentalist should always be awake to his eternal relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead and should carefully cultivate Krishna consciousness. Being confident of his relationship with the Lord, he should not endeavor for his personal maintenance, knowing that the Lord is protecting him in all respects. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur states that the example of the python is given so that one will not uselessly waste his time in bodily maintenance. One should not think, however, that the purpose of life is to lie on the ground like a python or to make a show of starving the body. The example of the python should not encourage one to become completely inactive. One should rather become active in spiritual advancement and inactive in material sense gratification. If one becomes completely inactive, that is certainly nidra, or the darkness of ignorance, in which one remains asleep to his identity as an eternal servant of the Personality of Godhead. A transcendentalist is eager to execute his service to the Lord, and therefore he is grateful when the Lord provides material facilities for such service. Mere renunciation of the material world is falgu varagya, or an immature stage of spiritual understanding. One must come to the stage of yukta vairagya, engaging everything in the service of the Lord. It is our practical experience that a devotee absorbed in spreading Krishna consciousness automatically receives all facilities for his personal maintenance.
A verse which has been kind of like similar topics have been discussed throughout Bhagavad Gita and also in Srimad Bhagavatam. It's a very important one, being basically the three points are discussed in this verse. That is, first of all, being materially inactive. That means not materially inactive. Active for not doing anything, but that means not being active for pleasing one's senses.
then there is mentioned how one should not be inactive. And the third point discussed is here how one should be active in the service of the Lord. So there's I've found several parts in Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam I'm going to refer to. But one thing which like straight away came to my mind when we were starting discussing the python is there's another python mentioned earlier on in Bhagavatam. Does anybody remember in which connection and what it was about? Sorry? Yeah, that's another python. Yes, it's Prahlad Maharaj. And the chapter is in the seventh canto. This is it's called The Behavior of a Perfect Person. So in that chapter, Prahlad Maharaj is he's a king at that stage and he's wandering throughout the country. And he meets a person who's lying on the ground and he's pretty fat. And he starts inquiring from this person who is imitating the behavior of a python. So my spiritual master, His Holiness Devaramita Swami, was giving like whole seminar about these classes. So they're very instructive. I'm just going to read through a couple of verses from here. It's a very interesting chapter. It's the Canto 7, chapter 13. It starts from around the 13th verse. Translation, Prahlad Maharaj, the most dear servitor of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, once went out touring the universe with some of his confidential associates just to study the nature of saintly persons. Thus he arrived at the bank of the Kaveri, where there was a mountain known as Sahya. There he found a great saintly person who was lying on the ground, covered with dirt and dust, but who was deeply spiritually advanced. Neither by that saintly person's activities, by his bodily features, by his words, nor by the symptoms of his Varnashram status could people understand whether he was the same person they had known. The advanced devotee Prahlad Maharaj duly worshipped and offered obeisances to the saintly person who had adopted a python's means of livelihood. After thus worshipping the saintly person and touching his own head to the saint's lotus feet, Prahlad Maharaj, in order to understand him, inquired very submissively as follows. Seeing the saintly person to be quite fat, Prahlad Maharaj said, "My dear sir, you undergo no endeavor to earn your livelihood, but you have a stout body, exactly like that of a materialistic enjoyer. I know that if one is very rich and has nothing to do, he becomes extremely fat by eating and sleeping and performing no work. O Brahmana, fully in knowledge of transcendence, you have nothing to do and therefore you are lying down. It is also understood that you have no money for sense enjoyment. How then has your body become so fat?" And I suppose materialistic persons would be quite offended at that stage. "Under the circumstances, if you do not consider my question impudent, kindly explain how this happened. Your Honor appears learned, expert, and intelligent in every way. You can speak very well, saying things that are pleasing to the heart. You see that people in general are engaged in fruitive activities, yet you're lying here inactive." Narada Muni continued, "When the saintly person was thus questioned by Prahlad Maharaj, the king of the Daityas, he was captivated by the shower of nectarian words, and he replied to the inquisitiveness of Prahlad Maharaj with a smiling face. The saintly Brahmana said, 'O best of the Asuras.'" So most of the will know he's mentioned as Asura. Of course he's a devotee, but he's the son of a great Asura. So therefore he's addressed as the Asuras. Also in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says among the Daitya demons, "I'm the devoted Prahlad." So the saintly Brahmana said, "O best of the Asuras, Prahlad Maharaj, who are recognized by advanced and civilized men, you are aware of the different stages of life because of your inherent transcendental eyes with which you can see a man's character and thus know clearly the results of acceptance and rejection of things as they are." Narayan, the Supreme Personality of God, who is full of all opulences, is predominant within the core of your heart. because of your being a pure devotee. He always drives away all the darkness of ignorance as a sun drives away the darkness of the universe. My dear king, although you know everything, you have posed some questions, which I shall try to answer according to what I have learned by hearing from authorities. I cannot remain silent in this regard, for a personality like you is just fit to be spoken to by one who desires self-purification. Because of insatiable material desires, I was being carried away by the waves of material nature's laws, and thus I was engaging in different activities, struggling for existence in various forms of life. In the course of the evolutionary process, which is caused by fruitive activities, due to undesirable material sense gratification, I have received this human form of life, which can lead to the heavenly planets, to liberation, to the lower species, or to rebirth among human beings. And now it becomes really interesting. Well, it's been interesting before too, but this is, now it comes to the point. In this human form of life, a man and a woman unite for the sensual pleasure of sex. But by actual experience, we have observed that none of them are happy. Therefore, seeing the contrary results, I have stopped taking part in materialistic activities. The actual form of life for the living entities is one of spiritual happiness, which is real happiness. This happiness can be achieved only when one stops all materialistic activities. Material sense enjoyment is simply imagination. Therefore, considering this subject matter, I've ceased from all material activities and am lying down here. In this way, the conditioned soul living within the body forgets the self-interest because he identifies himself with the body. Because the body is material and its natural tendency is to be attracted by the varieties of the material world, thus the living entity suffers the miseries of material existence. So that's a very interesting part of the Srimad Bhagavatam, and it explains exactly what also the Avadhuta Brahmana did, or what the Avadhuta Brahmana could learn from the python, is to become completely inactive to sense enjoyment, and that is because there's this understanding of that there's actually nothing like material happiness. The python man explains that material happiness is just imagination. So, in ignorance, we think that the body is all in all. Because we have no knowledge of the spiritual soul, we think, like, you know, I'm it, and it is me, and it's all about the body. And whatever happiness experienced through the body, through the senses, through the mind, that actually is reality, and that is the purpose of life, to achieve that kind of happiness. And, when we look at the animal kingdom, we can see basically underlined what we are trying. Like, you know, we can see like a pigeon is running around trying to pick up some crumbs, and you know, is happy when it gets some crumbs, and is distressed when someone is chasing it away. Or with children, you know, a child, and first it's laughing and they're playing together, and then something happens, it falls, and like the whole world is just drowned in an ocean of distress. You know, it's just like totally overwhelmed with just this sensual experience of having pain. There's no reflection, there's no kind of ability to kind of cope with these sensual experiences, because there's a total identification with the material self. And the emotions. So, and according, because we have a strong identification with our body, like all our activities are directed to some or other get pleasure from this body. It's interesting, when we look at our activities throughout the day, and like just really honestly just look at our activities, we can see that it's pretty much all just dedicated to get some kind of happiness. You know, we want good food, we want to have some pleasant experiences through, like, you know, social interchange. You know, we like the whole day basically is for our ego, how others are going to recognize us, how our body is going to feel, how we can feed it. And like, this is basically, you know, like, if you're really, really honest with us, like, most of our activities are going to be dedicated to it. And then, you know, every once in a while Krishna comes into our mind and we think, like, that then there comes some beauty consciousness in our mind. We think, oh, actually I'm supposed to do devotional service. And maybe that flows in some interest. Oh, you know, if I do the service, you know, somebody is going to say I did it very well, or I can just combine it with the kind of things I like to do anyway. And then the part of the Krishna consciousness kind of is quite small, unfortunately. But by sticking to our duty and doing it anyway, even though we really might not feel like that, then this part is going to grow, this Krishna conscious part is going to grow and become more solid. And we actually also learn that this happiness becomes like quite insignificant, like the sensual happiness or the mental happiness becomes actually quite significant, because we actually start seeing that we actually just quite happy just doing service. And it's like something I kind of noticed on Sankirtan. You know, you feel like really horrible doing it, and people are really, you know, they don't stop, and it's cold, and it's like, it's essential, very unpleasant experiences, especially if you don't have any success. But you actually, once you kind of just do it anyway without thinking too much about it, you're actually quite happy just doing it. And like, you know, you kind of come home and you just really kind of like your heart feels light and your mind feels light, and you're just happy doing your service. So we should become more and more inactive towards these activities we are doing all day long for pleasing ourselves, because ultimately, as been explained by the Python Man, there's no such thing as happiness. Nanda Mandir was saying the other day that, you know, people experience the gap between two miseries as happiness, and this is it's very interesting to actually meditate on that point. Another verse from the Bhagavad Gita came to my mind about this inactivity, or like about this state of consciousness in which we become inactive to material happiness and active for the real self-interest. And that is in the Bhagavad Gita 2:69. Does anybody know the Sanskrit by heart? Das yanishta sarvabhutanam tasyam jagati sangyami yasyam jagrati bhutani sanisha pasyatomne. This what's night for all beings is a time of awakening for the self-controlled. And the time of awakening for all beings is night for the introspective sage. Purport. There are two classes of intelligent men. One is intelligent to material activities for sense gratification, and the other is introspective and awake to the cultivation of self-realization. Activities of the introspective sage or thoughtful man are night for persons materially absorbed. Materialistic persons remain asleep in such a night due to their ignorance of self-realization. The introspective sage remains alert in the night of the materialistic man. The sage feels transcendental pleasure in the gradual advancement of spiritual culture, with the man and materialistic activities being asleep to self-realization, dreams of varieties of sense pleasure, feeling sometimes happy and sometimes distressed in a sleeping condition. The introspective man is always indifferent to materialistic happiness and distress. He goes on with self-realization activities undisturbed by material reactions. So in this verse, again, the same is explained. It's explained that this time, again, it refers to night and day. So before we had an example of the Python, and now we have like, it's like two different realities in which people live. We can either live in a spiritual reality, or we can live in the material reality. So, or Krishna consciousness, or materialistic, or Maya consciousness. Oh, well, we're not even aware of Maya, actually. Just doing her thing. So often ignorance is explained as a form of sleep. We have also found Bhaktivinoda Thakur, our ladies' band, has been studying the song, or like doing the song, like Jeev Jago, Gorachana Bole, Kutanita Chaumaya Pishachira Kore. So it means, like, wake up, you know, Jeev Jago, wake up, sleeping soul. Wake up from your, you know, slumber of ignorance. You've been sleeping so long on the lap of the witch Maya. So once we wake up, then we can... What is happening when we wake up? Yeah, we see reality. Before we might have dreamt, like Srila Prabhupada often gives the example of, you know, we sleep and we dream the tiger's eating us. Or we have so many different identities or realities. Or like we just desired something in the day and like it all happens. Or like we have like something really horrible happens. But we are totally illusioned. There's actually no perception of reality in a dreaming condition. We can't just dream anything. We can dream we are Cleopatra, or we can dream we are a frog, or we are dying. And so it's a total detachment from sleeping. Has anybody been doing sleepwalking?
I've been tired. I did that once when I was a kid.
You did it once?
Yeah.
Once. Ah, okay. I've been...
I walked into my parents' room and I was sleepwalking. I had no recollection of it.
Yeah.
I was told when I woke up that I'd been sleepwalking. Luckily I didn't fall. I was okay.
Yeah. I actually have been doing like heaps of sleepwalking. Like I remember when I was living in London and at the temple, I was doing all kinds of things. One time I came into my sister's room and I was shouting at her because I thought she took something which belonged to me. And like one time I was going, and that was when I was really little kid, just as in my 90s, and I was dragging my blanket and everything behind me. And my mom kind of woke up and saw me going out. And I wanted to go on the street, and I was carrying all my bedding with me, and she just put me back to bed. But the most interesting dream I had, most interesting experience I had was when I was living in London. I was often sleepwalking then. I was getting up in the middle of the night, and I found myself on the wall, and it was like all dark in the room, and I somehow tried to find the door. But of course I didn't, because first of all, I wasn't awake, and there was no light either. So I was at that time, I was working in Radharani's bakery, and they were doing like heaps of birthday cakes. And they had like this, they were baking all this cake in things, and then they were filling it afterwards. So when they put them out of the oven, we had this little trolley and we were putting on them. So I was sleepwalking and I was dreaming that I was collecting these cakes from everywhere and was bringing them and putting them on the trolley. And I was living with another girl in the room, and I woke up when she made a noise. And when I woke up, I thought her head is a cake. So I was standing right in front of her bed and just trying to kind of take her. And then she made some noise, and I woke up and I was like, wow, that was really freaky, like somebody standing like that in the middle of the night on your head. So I was thinking, I was quite glad that she didn't totally wake up, and I went back to bed. But it's like a total different reality. It had nothing to do with reality. I wasn't in the shop, I didn't do anything with cakes, I was just sleepwalking and imagining some kind of reality. So the point I want to make is that when we're illusioned or when we're in sleep, our activities basically are totally nonsense. You know, like we can't act properly if we are illusioned. You know, for example, give me a good example. Like you think you're in Germany and you start speaking German to everybody. Nobody's understanding you. Like if we have a different reality, like we just don't fit in this world. Or you think you're a fish, try to breathe in the ocean. It just doesn't make sense. So for acting properly, we have to have knowledge. We have to be awake. We have to be aware. And if we can see things as they are in our world, then we actually can apply ourselves. Otherwise, what is the point of acting anyway? We just, you know, make things worse. We can see, for example, in this world, because everybody's in ignorance, everybody just destroys everything. Because they don't know how to act properly in this world. You know, we have people that they're destroying nature, they're destroying themselves. Like a person, for example, who's in ignorance, he destroys his body. Like we have all this advertisement, like, you know, like not for against ice. You can, like, you know, they just put a big campaign out, like, you know, I just was yesterday sitting at the tram stop and there was this girl and she had like bruises, open bruises all over the body. And it, like, so many advertisements against the people take ice. But why do people take ice? It's because they're totally in illusion. They're totally in the mode of ignorance. They don't know what to do with themselves. So a person in knowledge, a person who is awake, who can see reality, he acts appropriately to this world. And he acts appropriately to himself, and he will see his self-interest, which is self-realization. So now, in Maya, we do so many stupid things. We're running around all day for pleasing our body and our senses, but ultimately it has nothing to do with us. It has totally nothing to do with us. We're doing so many things. We're identifying with our emotions. You know, we try to somehow or other get some happiness through so many different channels from ourselves. And ultimately, it's just a waste of time because it is not our self-interest. We should be engaged with self-realization because this is who we are. And once we understand that, then we will apply ourselves to it naturally. So it's not that we are inactive. It's not that we kind of, you know, like when you wake up, what does it feel? You know, you're not just going to lie in bed like, I'm awake. You know, you rub your eyes, you kind of, get out of bed, you know, take a shower, you make yourself ready for the day. So you can see like how, what a nonsense like impersonal philosophy is. Even this simple example. If we are awake, we are active. Because that's a natural condition of a living being. Like who's going to find pleasure being awake and just lying in bed? Like if you're really sick, you're going to experience that. It's not too much of a nice experience. So, so Srila Prabhupada was often saying that, you know, like people we are not like dead stones who are inactive. But it basically means also just another form of ignorance because we don't see our relationship with the Supreme Lord. Yeah, that's an interesting example about like this So like one level is to understand that we shouldn't act for sense gratification. That's that's one platform to attain. But then afterward we should actually realize what our real activities are. So I'm just totally confused. Sorry. Yeah. So Srila Prabhupada explains in the purport through the example of the python that we should not just be inactive and make a show of our renunciation and that we are not just renunciates. So one time there was this great, great yogi in the 70s and everyone is like, Baba and like Swamiji and so on. And there was a picture, like a big picture for, as an advertisement, and this yogi was standing next to this pile of gold. And he was like, bah! Kind of like just rejected. It was like a disgusting kind of gesture. He was just like renouncing the whole thing. And Srila Prabhupada said, oh, you should give that to us. And he said, come, you know, give it all to us. Because Srila Prabhupada had the intelligence, he knew how to use things. And we're not just renouncing it. We're not just saying like, oh, you know, this body, you know, this bag of blood, pus, urine, stool, and whatever else in there, like, you know, like I have nothing to do with it. No, we make the best out of a bad bargain. We have the body, so we're going to deal with it. Like, what we do with it, we apply it in the service to the Supreme Lord. And there's another example it's actually a Christian example. It's like a person is challenging God, like, you know, I'm the supreme creator, look what wonderful, you know, Volkswagen or whatever I just created, or microwave. And it says, okay, it says, God, let's have a competition. It's so, like, let's create a, you know, human being or whatever. And like the, you know, the great scientist, he kind of just starts to collect all the dirt, and God says, ah, get your own dirt. So it says basically all we have is supplied by the Supreme Lord. And we don't have anything anyway. So what's the point of renunciation? If I, like, for example, Swarup Shaktisari, I say, I renounce Swarup Shaktisari. It's like, it's not mine. So if you say, we renounce this world, or we renounce so many things, it's actually not ours anyway. Like, we've been everything given, even this very body we have. It's been given by Lord Krishna. Our mind we have is given by Lord Krishna. So instead of renouncing it, what doesn't make any sense anyway, since we have been given it, we should use it for His purpose. If you're employed and you're driving a car for a person or something like that, you use it in that person's service, and He's been supplying you with it. So we should be 100%. Engaged in the Lord's service, and we should offer everything we have in the Lord's service. There's in the neck of instruction, it's very amazingly given. Like it's like so many like practical instructions how to deal with our every life. So in the text 2 and text 3, we have been told what to accept and what to reject. If you text to one's devotion service is spoiled when it becomes too entangled in the following six activities: eating more than necessary or collecting more funds than required, over endeavoring for money things that are very difficult to obtain, talking unnecessarily about mundane subject matters, practicing the scriptural rules and regulations only for the sake of following them and not for the sake of spiritual advancement, or rejecting the rules and regulations of the scriptures and working independently or whimsically, associating with worldly-minded persons who are not interested in Krishna consciousness and being greedy for mundane achievements. And in text 3, very clearly we can see what we are supposed to accept. The six principles favorable to the execution of pure devotion service: being enthusiastic, endeavoring with confidence, being patient, acting according to regulative principles, such as Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, hearing, chanting, and remembering Krishna, abandoning the association of non-devotees, following the footsteps of the previous acharyas. These six principles undoubtedly assure the complete success of pure devotional service. So there are certain things we can accept and certain things we can reject, and all the things we've been given, we're dealing with them in a certain way according to the principles which are given, for example, in the Upadeshamrita. For example, we have this body. How do we use this body in the service of the Lord? We don't do anything which is obstructing us from the service of the Lord. That means we don't overeat. That means we don't waste too much time in eating. We keep our body healthy. We don't have to work so hard for getting all this money to buy luxury food or something like that. And, you know, we are enthusiastic and we endeavor with confidence. So we're going to train our intelligence to act according to these principles for the pleasure of the Supreme Lord with our own body. And once we become aware through applying these principles, then hopefully one day it's going to become natural. And we become naturally attracted to just performing the Lord's service and disinterested in pleasing our body. So if we look at Krishna's nature, which is so promising, which is like when we read the past times, which are so attractive, then with our intelligence, when we're not on the platform of actually realizing it, but even through our intelligence, we can see, what actually am I doing here trying to please this body? And like we hear how most beautiful Krishna is. Krishna says, know that all beautiful, opulent, and glorious things spring from but a spark of my splendor. And he it's described Krishna's beauty. So why are we looking outside? Somehow our eyes try to hold on to some beauty in this world. Why don't we just believe Krishna? And he will make us see when we qualify ourselves about it. But this is Premanjana, Chaita, Bhakti, Vilachanina, Santasa, Daiva, Alideishu, Vidakayanti, King Shamasundra, Machinta, Guna, Swarupam, Guvinam, Adi, Purusham, Tangaham, Vajami. So in the heart of hearts, we will see this Lord as in his eternal form as Shamasundra, with eyes which are anointed with the pulp of love. And then we will naturally be disinterested, but as long as we are not on the platform, we're just going to stick to the principles we are given. We have so many wonderful instructions throughout the Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam. They give us so much of an idea that they give us so much good advice. And we have the association of senior devotees who additionally explain it to us. So we just have to basically apply it. All we have to do is what is told to us. And just give up this false pride of always thinking we can figure it out ourselves. When you do book distribution, it's incredible. Like, there's probably like 20 million gurus in Australia. Because everybody thinks that they're their own guru. They think, like, you try to stop somebody, oh, I'm fine. Oh, like, oh, kind of, I figured it out all myself. You know, like, everybody is so proud. They don't go anywhere. They constantly suffer so much misery in their life. But they have this pride to say, I'm all right, and, you know, I kind of can figure it all out in myself. Or, you know, I have my own philosophy. What is your own philosophy? Eat, sleep, and, you know, be merry and enjoy. You know, like, what is your own philosophy? It is the same old program the animals are doing as well. It's not your own philosophy. It's been around since forever. Since Maya created this philosophy, you know, people have been applying it very faithfully, very devotedly. So we just have to stick to the principles we have given. We know everything. Like, everything is in the scriptures. We know what we should do. We know what we shouldn't do. We know how to behave with each other. We even get to know how to clean our very own bodies. Like, how perfect is that philosophy, you know? We know, like, it's everything is explained. It's about the dealings with each other, you know, about even about getting married, about getting children, about eating, about sleeping, about every single thing. The instructions in the scriptures. And it is said, if you do this, you're going to get this result. And if we apply ourselves a little bit, we will see that the results are coming. Still, we are really, really critical to other aspects. Krishna's really going to look after us if we surrender. He has said that, in other words, the transcendentalist should always be awake to his eternal relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead and should carefully cultivate Krishna consciousness. Being confident of his relationship with the Lord, he should not endeavor for his personal maintenance, knowing that the Lord is protecting him in all respects. Sri Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur states that the example of the python is given so that one will not uselessly waste his time in bodily maintenance. Well, that's pretty much on the platform of sannyas, to have that depth of realization. And we don't have, like, we shouldn't jump anything and, like, just have a wrong application of the philosophy. But still, we have this knowledge that actually Krishna is looking after us. And if we look at us, like, we have basically the best of everything. We have the best friendships, we have the best food, we have the best places to live, we have the best activities to do in the day. We basically get the cream of everything, and still we think, oh, I've been doing so much service. But like, Krishna is looking so amazingly after us. Like, who's more happy since then, Krishna consciousness? I certainly am. Like, before, when I look at my life before, there was so much so many problems, so much insecurities, so much suffering. But then you become, when you come to Krishna, Krishna is looking after you in every respect. And the more we will surrender unto the Lord, the more He will look after us. Krishna says, Bhogdram yakyatapasam sava lokamaishram sridam suravutanam yakvamam samtim rishti. He's the proprietor of everything, he is an enjoyer of everything, and is the well-wisher and benefactor of all living entities. So we actually, and since Krishna is all-powerful, what can't He supply? So we are perfectly looked after. We just have to apply ourselves to Krishna's service, and all good will come in our lives. For now and for the future, we will hopefully be with the Supreme Lord. Just one last example. About this waking up. We hear all these things. We know all about Krishna. We kind of have an idea how beautiful and wonderful He is, but still we are a bit hesitant and we don't really, you know, want to wet our feet too much. So my spiritual master, he was saying, even more difficult than waking a person up is to try to wake somebody up who pretends to sleep. So sometimes we are like that, you know, we like kind of like children often do that, you know, lie on the bed and like the mom comes in, they just pretend that they're sleeping. So you can't wake somebody up who's pretending to sleep because they're actually already awake. So sometimes we are like a bit in that same condition. We kind of know all about Krishna, but still we kind of pretend like, oh, actually, you know, I don't really want to hear it. You know, I don't really want to hear that I have to get up and, you know, serve the Lord. So Lord Chaitanya is very expert. And He gives us, before even we get out of bed, He gives us a taste, so that we become hungry for more and become encouraged to engage in the service. Are there any questions or comments from any? Anything to add? How to engage ourselves. So you mean like text number 3 is The Nectar of Instruction is a really incredible book. So it speaks about principles which are favorable for the execution of devotional service, as first being enthusiastic, endeavoring with confidence, being patient, acting according to regulative principles, such as Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, hearing, chanting, remembering Krishna, abandoning the association of non-devotees, following the footsteps of previous acharyas. These 6 principles undoubtedly assure the complete success of pure devotional service. Yeah, so well, there's like enthusiasm, patience, and determination. And not just in spiritual life, but we can see in every field of activities these 3 items, they give us success. For example, if you have a project and you're not enthusiastic about it, you won't invest your energies. Or you're not determined, as soon as one obstacle comes in the way, you just drop it all. Or being patient. Like, you know, you can't expect success the next day. Srila Prabhupada said if a woman gets married, she can't expect to have a child the next morning. So these 3 principles that will enable us to stick through to devotion and service to the Lord, and they will give us strength to execute it whatever happens. So we have to, like, you know, there might be so many things, like material life will throw so many obstacles towards us. Like, so many things might happen along the way. You know, some devotees have lost their guru, then there's, like, you know, horrible marriage, physical illness, so many problems can happen along the way. But what are we going to do about it? You know, Krishna says he is the supreme controller, so we are not the supreme controller. So whatever happens, we just somehow or other have to be strong enough to stick through it. And the confidence that devotion and service, or that, you know, like Krishna consciousness, is the ultimate. It's the most important thing, and it's the ultimate. And whatever happens along the way, we just have to tolerate and have to deal with it and do the best and continue with our service. That's duty consciousness, to just keep going with our service. And acting according to the regulated principles. So we have the verse, Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu Smaram Parasevanam Archanam Vandam Dasyam Sakyam Atma Nivedanam. It's hearing the name glories of the Supreme Lord, chanting His glories, remembering the Lord, serving the Lord's feet, worshipping the deity, offering obeisances unto the Lord, acting as the Lord's servant, making friends with the Lord, surrendering oneself fully to the Lord. So these are the activities we engage in, and we can see it, you know, this has been passed down by the Acharyas. So even in our immature stage, we can see the benefit of it. If you do the deity worship, you will, like, it helps to, first of all, to be clean, and it helps you to develop duty consciousness, and it's such a meditation to, you know, to meditate on that you're actually serving the Lord directly. And the Lord will, you know, in the way you try to please Him, He will reciprocate. The Lord's, you know, form is this mercy incarnation. And we chant and we hear. Everybody must have had the experience. You wake up and your mind is like, woo, just crazy. Like, you're thinking about things like, it's like, oh my gosh, how did that happen to be in my mind? And then you start chanting and you start controlling your mind. You try to pull it back and pull it back and pull it back. And after you chant, even though it might have been a torture with the chanting, but you feel so light, and actually you might have even had some moments where you thought, actually chanting just actually makes me quite happy and I actually really like it. So this is the beginning. And afterward, once we, you know, dedicate our lives to the chanting, like my Guru Maharaj always says, that we should arrange our entire day around our chanting. Like, the chanting is the center. And sometimes you see devotees saying, you know, like, I think probably you mentioned, Keshava, probably you mentioned that one time you saw one devotee riding on the bike to cross with this, like, this clicker, this counter. It's like, if we treat the chanting like that, then we won't really have the success. It's like cooking with fire. If we cook with fire, there's a lot of cooking with smoke. If there's a lot of smoke, it won't really heat anything. You won't really cook anything. But if we concentrate our mind on it, and at the beginning it will be slow, but Krishna is so merciful that He will give us the ability more and more, the more we try and dedicate ourselves to it and make the chanting the priority. And then gradually we will be able to cook with fire. When we cook with fire, the cooking process goes very fast. So advancement will be very, very fast in Krishna consciousness if we cook with the fire of the holy name and try to avoid the offenses and all the smoke around it. Just try it and Krishna will reciprocate. And yeah, you know, there's so many other, acting as the Lord's servants, making friends with the Lord, surrendering oneself fully to the Lord. It's very, very advanced principles. Very advanced, but you know, can just try our very best, mature platform. So abandoning the association of non-devotees. Everybody who's dealing with non-devotees knows that it's very easy to get contaminated. You know, they talk about mundane things, they talk about, you know, cinemas and girlfriend and going out on the weekend. And, you know, you can easily be put an idea in your mind. And, you know, like, also our conditioning, you might remember what we've been doing and some taste might come up again for these things. And it just distracts ourselves from Krishna. So we shouldn't. And following in the footsteps of the previous Acharya, which means not imitating but serving them. So if we serve Srila Prabhupada, we can serve him through his books, through his instructions, and gradually we'll attain all success in our spiritual life and get his mercy, because when we serve Srila Prabhupada and his instructions, our own guru, you know, all we have is their mercy. Yasya prasadam bhagavat prasada. So without the mercy of the spiritual master, we cannot make any advancement on spiritual life. So we get his mercy by following his instructions and by serving him faithfully in that way. Is there anything else anybody wants to say? So exactly.
I was thinking here just how we can live a sharing active and thinking how we have a ritual consciousness. Like that we can be chanting, we can be doing so much service, but then the chant offense comes in, maintaining material attachment, even after we read so much Srimad Bhagavatam and we hear from classes. So how can I actually like catch a wake up and really not, you know, start letting go of all these material attachments, because then that blocks me from properly executing the ritual service.
In the seventh canto, like, and you know, instruction from the behavior of a perfect person, is that by practical experience we see that, you know, like you're saying, like men and women unite for sex pleasure, but there's no happiness. So we can, like, you know, what do we contemplate? What do we attach to? And what happiness is in there? Now we can intellectually understand it. For example, that's why we should read Srila Prabhupada's books. They make our intelligence strong. They give us a power of discrimination. We can see actually what am I doing in this world? And what do I try to enjoy? Do I try to enjoy my youth? You know, do I try to enjoy prestige? What has it really done to me? You know, for example, if we try to enjoy prestige, somebody will defame us. And then we get upset and angry. If we attach ourselves to something, straight away misery. Straight away. You're attached to your youth? Just wait some years, you're going to be old. Your skin is going to hang. It's going to be ugly. Everything we try to enjoy is going to turn misery. And there's no happiness even in the enjoyment, because it's not us. So we might not have the realization at that point, like I certainly don't have it. But like if we try to meditate on it, and we see there's something I want to enjoy, and then our intelligence kicks in. No, this is this, that, the other. Contemplating the objects of the senses, attachment, lust, anger, blah, 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 blah. In this whole way, right down. If we think about it, then we can think, oh no, I'm not going to go this way. I'm just not going to do it. And we stop ourselves, and we learn to control our senses, and we develop detachment. And knowledge and detachment is very powerful. And we apply ourselves simultaneously to the service of the Lord with this attitude of detachment from material things, and the Lord sees our sincere endeavors, then we will greatly develop some taste for devotional service, and it will replace also the happiness we've been trying to get in the material world. And it's just like just a shadow, it's just a reflection. So the happiness we get from it is quite insignificant, that actually just a teeny tiny bit of attachment to Krishna can replace it. But for now it's like, I suppose, you know, once you like, you know, try to, that's what I try to do, like try to deal with attachments with knowledge. And another thing is, if actually my spiritual master was talking about it, knowledge is a very powerful thing, but if we are not able to do that, we just don't do it anyway. No? For example, we try to get some kind of, you know, we try to contemplate on something and try to get some pleasure out of it. And we can really meditate on the duty consciousness. We're just not doing it. because it's going to displace Srila Prabhupada, it's going to displace our spiritual master, and there's no benefit in it anyway. So for example, if you chant, what good do you do when you space out and meditate just on yourself instead of on the holy name? So we just try not to do it. And eventually, and eventually gradually, the realizations will come about it. And there's also certain attachments we have to fulfill. Some things we can't just jump. And for example, like, you know, a lot of people get married because there's like this is attraction and we just can't skip it. So there are certain things which are, but these are also done under guidance. Like, you know, major things like that, they are done under guidance.
Is that okay? Anybody else?
Srimad Bhagavatam ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada ki Jai. Nanta Koti Vaishnavinda ki Jai.